welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. It's been a little while since we've recorded one of these episodes. It wasn't a preview of a KU football opponent coming up. But tonight, I got a special guest. We've had so many new people come on the podcast. I thought it was about time to get back to someone who was one of the first guests that we actually had. I have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Jesse, how are you doing tonight?
Doing all right. Yeah, I feel like I've been on this a few times, so now I a loyal listener and a loyal guest coming back, so that's good.
Sounds great. Yeah, I think you actually were the second guest that we had on. The very first was Carrington Harrison over 610 Sports, but you were very quick to come after that, and probably you were one of the ones I was the most excited about, kind of the first sports writer. I kind of always consider myself to be an amateur sports writer, and as I've kind of gotten more and more into this, you know, I've looked at kind of what you've done and a few of the other guys like Scott Chasen, and just enjoyed being able to speak with you guys and kind of talk about what goes into that. And obviously, you know, the KU team that we all have in common. So the very first thing that I wanted to talk about, kind of, I think the biggest news, which is kind of surprising given the fact, you know, that football season is really, really close. Andrea Hootie announced recently, well, it was announced that she is leaving Kansas after 15 years with the Kansas basketball program and going to basically fill the same position down at Texas, being the head strength and conditioning coach for the basketball team down there. I kind of want to get your reaction. I saw you had put a little something up on the Kansas City Star's website, kind of talking about this, but what was your reaction upon initially hearing the news that she was leaving Kansas and then leaving it to go to Texas?
Yeah. Well, shock, honestly. You know, we'd gotten just kind of wind, Gary Bedore did, that this might be happening. So we were, you know, calling people that night and were able to break that story. But I think once you get to a place for 15 years and, you know, a place like Kansas where there's not going to be many other schools out there that offer a lot better when it comes to facilities and also publicity, especially when it comes to the men's basketball team like Andrea Hootie was associated with, that you just sort of figure that this relationship's going to last, or at least it's going to last between Bill Self and Andrea Hootie, you know, as long as they both stay at the same school. But yeah, when it doesn't end like that, it's sort of surprising. It's sort of jarring. And I think I mentioned that on Twitter as well, just where you see that Texas has photoshopped the burnt orange shirt on Hootie with the Longhorn on it. And it's like, wow, that just doesn't look right. That's not what we're all accustomed to. So a lot of surprise with that to start off with. You know, some of this sort of makes sense. And unfortunately for us, I mean, I'm sure at some point we'll learn more of the backstory, but everybody wants to know, why did it happen? You know, why did Hootie leave? Why did she not stay with KU? And the best answer that we can give is going to come from Andrea Hootie. You know what I mean? I mean, if you think about everybody in their lives, I mean, when you decide, hey, I'm going to take this new job or this new opportunity or do something in life that people don't expect, you know, you can call your friend and you can speculate, or you can call people up and wonder why your friend did that. But unless you just sit down and talk to your friend, it's kind of difficult to get real answers, because otherwise you're not really getting it from the direct source. And Andrea Hootie has sort of been quiet after this, and probably for good reason. You know, she started at Texas this week already, you know, basically immediately left KU and started with her new job. So without getting stuff directly from her, and we have not gotten, you know, a lot of information directly from her, it's going to be difficult to sort of speculate on the exact reasons for it. But, you know, some of the things we can assume, and I think that they are pretty decent assumptions, is that Texas does what it does. You know, they throw a boatload of money at somebody and see if they can get them to leave. They obviously have admired what Andrea Hootie has done at KU from afar, and lots of people have, based off the awards she's won and how well respected she is. And then it is appropriate at this time to sort of wonder about this Kansas health system when it comes to Kansas athletics. It seemed like a really good idea in practice or in theory that, you know, Douglas Girard, the chancellor at Kansas, would come together and kind of do this for the welfare of the student athletes, where basically they are going to be have better care taken of them because the strength coaches for them are going to be supervised by medical personnel and not directly supervised, or you know, have those medical personnel directly supervised by the head coaches, who have an incentive to win. So all that sounds great for the student athlete, but again, in practice, I don't know how that's gone, because it's really appropriate to ask the question now. KU lost in football a longtime trainer in Murphy Grant, and then a couple months later, after this thing is implemented, they lose Andrea Hootie. So, you know, they were now KU basically, you know, KU Med employees that were being paid by KU Athletics through KU Med. So some maybe some things to work out with that and to see. And obviously, I don't know how much she was still able to work with Bill Self. It wasn't her boss anymore. So those are questions to be asked here at a future time when we can talk to Douglas Girard and Jeff Long, all those sorts of things. So I think over the long run, this is a smart move by KU. I think a lot of other schools will follow it. But in the interim, when you have a couple of longtime employees that are considered, you know, the tops of their respective fields and they leave your school, the question has to be asked whether something's going on with that or not. So those are the first couple of things coming to mind. But like I said, a lot of it's speculation until you can actually talk to Andrea Hootie. And up until this point, we really haven't been able to sit down and get that talk with her. And I'm sure we'll know more at a later date and time. But as of right now, you kind of are left to guess at what is out there. And with Texas, again, we have probably a couple good guesses as to what it might be.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, that change with the Kansas health systems, you know, I think by necessity, it kind of changes the relationships, not only the relationship between, you know, the training staff and the head coaches. And that may have been part of the problem is that, you know, some of the training staff might have seen themselves as more of coaches as opposed to medical professionals. And so when that dynamic changes, maybe it kind of changes the way that they feel about the job that they're doing and kind of the way that they're doing it. But I also think it kind of changes in a similar way the relationship with the actual athletes themselves. Like they go from being part of the coaching staff and just focusing on their strength and conditioning to being part of the medical staff and kind of treating the you know, as much as they want to treat the players like the players that they have as coaches, you know, it becomes more of a medical professional's, you know, to patient relationship. And that may not sit right with people who have been so long used to being part of the athletic program itself. I agree with you. I think ultimately this is kind of the best way to make sure that medically the players are taken care of. And, you know, in any time you have a fundamental change in the way things are done, you are going to have people move on. The front runners are going to, you know, lose potentially some staff or, you know, lose out on some of the people that are used to the old way and don't necessarily want to make that change. And Andrea Hootie has been on the forefront of, you know, different technology and bringing new things. So this essentially seems to be a similar sort of thing, but from the administrative side where, you know, they're at the forefront of what probably is going to become the norm in college athletics. Naturally, there is going to be some people that, you know, resist that change up front. And again, I don't know if that's actually the reason she moved on, but assuming that that is the reason she moved on, like it makes sense that maybe she just didn't want to make the change at this point. And I can't really blame her for that. You know, she's been at the top of her field for 15 years. You know, it's natural to think that, you know, she's somewhat set in the way that she does things because it works. And so, you know, again, I'm not finding fault with anyone in this situation, but the other thing that kind of struck me, you know, during this is that she's been at Kansas for 15 years, has built, you know, helped to build one of the most successful programs, especially when you think about, you know, strength and conditioning. You know, she's constantly recognized as being at the forefront of her field. I'm wondering how much of this also is just, you know, how much more could she actually do here? And how much could she actually accomplish here other than just kind of maintaining the status quo as, you know, one of the better run strength and conditioning programs in the nation? Going to Texas gives her an opportunity now to kind of attack a new challenge, to do something new. And so I don't know that I can necessarily blame her if that's the motivation for moving on. I'm sure the money helps, but you know, if the motivation is that she's kind of achieved all that she can achieve here and is now looking for a new challenge, something new to do, you know, I can't really blame her for that. Like if I was doing the same thing in my job day to day and didn't have the new experiences and didn't have something to kind of build towards, I think I would, you know, kind of start looking for something else as well. Cause a lot of people don't like to just do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, it could be, you know, the other thing I kind of laugh about is, We might be making this more complicated too, because it still is Texas. And so Texas do what Texas do. You know what I mean? Like, if they have one thing going for them, they've got an athletic budget that, you know, basically dwarfs, that of schools like Kansas. So, you know, from the word around is that, you know, Hootie had offers before from other places and, KU had sort of, you know, stepped up to keep her there. And you talk about different challenges too. I understand what you're saying, and I understand that professionally, that, you know, maybe you want something different. The only thing I will say about that is I think the emotional reaction to her leaving, it was so intense. I mean, you saw people and all KU fans, it seemed like, you know, were pretty down and, you know, disappointed that she left. And when you talk about maybe stature or, you know, getting what she does known, I'm not sure that there's a better place in Kansas. And we talk about the things she's accomplished in her career. Well, she was named, you know, the NSCA Strength and Conditioning Coach of the Year. And then like 4 years later, she was given the Impact Award for, you know, breakthroughs in strength and conditioning. And I was talking online with some people, and we've kind of discussed, I've discussed it with Gary Bedore. I bet she's more well-known than the assistant coaches right now. You know what I mean? Like, I bet if you think about how people are known from the coaching staff on Kansas, I bet she's second behind Bill Self. I bet she's better known than Curtis Townsend. I bet she's better known than Norm Roberts. And both of them have been with Self almost just as long, if not longer, than Hootie has. So as far as just getting her message out there and having it known what she does, I mean, gosh, it seemed like Holly Rowe and Fran Fraccilla and myself and a lot of people were writing stories about, you know, the work she was doing and the breakthroughs, and for good reason. You know, she had has a very great scientific mind and exploring mind, all those sorts of things, and never really rested on laurels. Always wanted to be better, always wanted to learn about recovery, and wrote a book, and always, you know, was, you know, she's working with other departments in sports or in KU, the school, trying to do studies. And I remember I wrote a story about her, and they did a study on rest and seeing if the men's basketball players were stressed at the end of the season and how they could help them recover, all those sorts of things. So she was an inquiring mind. Again, it probably is different what she's doing at Texas, and that might excite her. So absolutely, that could be the case. But as far as spotlight goes or her being known what she was doing, I definitely think at Kansas that was a very good fit for her, because she seemed to get a lot of spotlight. And like I said, in my opinion, was second to only Bill Self when it came to the KU basketball team, if you take away the players, just because everybody knew who Hootie was. A lot of people knew who Hootie was. And that's the biggest reason why on social media and I think around KU fans, that this was such a disappointing loss, because everybody sort of connected with her and felt like they believed that she did a great job in the role that she had.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not saying that, you know, Texas is a much bigger platform or anything like that for, because you're right. I mean, Kansas is probably one of the few places where a strength and conditioning coach can become more famous you know, than most of the other, especially anyone on the football team. But you know, I also kind of have to think, you know, she was integral to the UConn building up the dynasty that they had in women's college basketball. Then she comes to Kansas and kind of does the same thing here at Kansas, you know, completely changes the conversation about the strength and conditioning programs and all that. And now if she can go to a place like Texas that isn't a huge basketball school anyway, and doesn't necessarily have, while they have a bunch of resources thrown at the school, those traditionally have not been directed towards the basketball program. So she can, you know, make the basketball program super relevant, and, you know, and can use what she's done to really kind of elevate that program stature and still be able to tap into, you know, the deep pockets financially to do the kind of research that she has been doing. And, you know, there's obviously the opportunity of not just doing that with basketball, but also with some of the other sports that they have there as well. There's a lot more, I think, resources for her to expand research opportunities if that's what it is that she's looking for. Not saying she wouldn't have those kind of opportunities at KU. I just think that naturally Texas, like you said, has a lot more resources that they could devote to that if they can, you know, if she can get the attention there. You know, but also to kind of just talk about now, I want to pivot to what this means for Kansas. Like, I've seen a lot of people kind of talking about, you know, like, what are we going to do? You know, like, how big of a hit is this going to be for Kansas? I find myself, you know, I find it difficult to really think that this is going to be anything too drastic, anything too like, you know, sky is falling for Kansas. They're going to find someone who won't be as well known as Hootie, won't, you know, be at the top of the field like she was necessarily, but someone who's very, very qualified, can take the systems that have been put in place and kind of continue with them. You know, I'm not necessarily too worried about their ability to find a replacement. Are you worried that there might be some sort of drop off, or if there is it even going to be noticeable?
It's a difficult time to talk about this just because it is that interim. And you would think, and this is me again speculating out there, but you would think that Bill Self would have some knowledge of a pick or somebody who he think could come in, because he's been around, you know, he knows other people out there. He knows people in the industry. And so I think you're absolutely right that people know Hootie. They felt like they related to Hootie. They knew her story. They were proud of what she represented, and she kind of just became a staple in KU basketball. So initially when she leaves, it's almost, you know, the gut reaction is from people is like, they're not going to replace her, but you're correct. I mean, they are going to replace her. I mean, she is going to have someone come in and someone else is going to run the strength and conditioning for KU. And there are other very well thought of and well qualified people out there. And like I said, you would think that Bill Self would have people out there that he knows that could take over and do a good job with the program. I think the bigger picture part of this, because you're right, they're going to hire a strength and conditioning coach. They're going to have their own method. KU's players will be jacked up. I mean, that's kind of how it always is going to work. I think the bigger question when you're looking at it from a, you know, a 1 mile high view perspective is, what does Bill Self think about all this? And again, just kind of like I talked about earlier, without us being able to talk to Andrea Hootie, we haven't really been able to talk very much to Bill Self and to kind of gauge what he thought about this whole thing. Because again, I mean, this could go a lot of different ways. I mean, if Bill really respected the job that Andrea did, but thought that maybe the, you know, his basketball team could use a different voice and that Andrea could expand elsewhere, then that could be one thought. Or if he really wanted to keep her and KU wouldn't match the raise for whatever reason, that's another thought. So it just kind of continues a sort of trend of things that have happened that it makes you wonder where Bill Self stands with all this stuff. And we know it's kind of a crucial point for KU because they haven't received a notice of allegations yet, but it still seems likely that that could happen. Jeff Long is a sort of new athletic director. And for all the talk out there that, hey, I know there was a lot of Shane Zenger hate out there and that people didn't like what he did, and especially with the football program. And a lot of that's understandable. The football program obviously did not make strides like it needed to under him. But the one thing he did pretty right was that he supported Bill Self and he let Bill Self run the show. And because of that, KU basketball kind of rolled along. You know, it didn't fall off the tracks. It just kind of kept steamrolling ahead. And so I think Hootie, more than anything, big picture, again, they'll replace her and they'll have another strength and conditioning coach and KU basketball will go on. But how does Bill Self feel about all this? And is this something that starts to make him question about the dedication to Kansas? Again, I can't answer that question because I haven't talked to Bill Self about it yet. But that is kind of the thing to keep in the back of your mind with the new athletic director and now this happening. And then obviously the things that have happened in the past with Silvio and being declared a booster, all these things with, I guess, Gasnol being declared a booster, how all this investigation will turn out, all these sorts of things. It kind of just is another piece of the puzzle to try to figure out what the future of KU basketball will be. Because again, for all the struggles that have been in football and the athletic programs and the athletic director and attendance, all these other things, the one thing that has not gone wrong has been Bill Self and KU basketball. And so if things start to wobble there, then that's going to be a huge concern, obviously, because that really is the one thing that the department has going right now.
Yeah, and that's, I think, about, you know, given everything else that Jeff Long seems to have done right, that's probably the one thing that can get people to turn on him real quick, is if something that he did, you know, if it were to come out, and I'm not saying this is the case at all, but if it were to come out that we lost Andrew Hootie because he didn't want to match, you know, a contract offer or something like that, and it causes a rift, like, that's a real quick way to get the fan base to turn on him really, really quickly. Not saying that that's actually happening or that's even likely. But yeah, I mean, we all know that, you know, basketball is king here at KU. And while as much as we would like football to get turned around as quickly as possible, the easiest way to alienate the fan base is to, you know, sacrifice basketball success to try to get the football team going. So, but yeah, so we'll go ahead and leave it there right now for the basketball. I do need to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. Okay, so we talked about basketball in the first segment. Obviously, football is coming up really quickly here. So it wouldn't be very responsible of me to completely ignore football when I have you here, Jesse. So did want to ask, and probably, you know, what is the biggest story is kind of the same biggest story that we've had going into camp the last couple of years, which is we do not have a starting quarterback named for the team yet. I don't know that people are as, you know, sky is falling about it as we were with David Beatty, which one I kind of find interesting. You know, it tells you a lot about how people feel about Les Miles versus David Beatty. But two, I also find it kind of frustrating at this point that, you know, we're kind of still at the point where we don't have a QB. That was probably the biggest gripe people had with David Beatty, was that, you know, we didn't have a starting quarterback named. What are the kind of the differences between the two situations, even though they kind of share the same, you know, result that we don't know who the starting quarterback is going to be probably before the game even happens, week one?
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario. And sometimes I feel like KU football just becomes this twilight zone because it feels like no matter the coach, no matter the situation, that these themes keep repeating themselves, even though you wouldn't think they would repeat themselves. Again, not naming starting quarterback for the first game. I feel like not many programs do that. You know, like I look at even K-State, like they had their starting quarterback with a new coach named way back in the spring. And I feel like most programs, that's how they operate. But for Kansas, for whatever reason, every single year, it's like they just can't ever name a starting quarterback before the first game. They can't throw their confidence behind somebody. And then even once they do that, it seems like the replacement's not far away. It's going to be that guy's going to get replaced within a half or a game or two games. And it's going to be just a carousel the whole entire season. So I don't know why that extends over coaches, but I feel like every time a new coach comes in, it's like, okay, this is going to change. This is going to turn into like a somewhat normal program. And it just never seems to happen. Talking about this particular quarterback battle, I think it is concerning for Kansas. I mean, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, I think if you look at this situation, again, we'll kind of go 1 mile high view here. KU had very limited scholarships coming into the season because David Beatty had used a bunch of blue shirts, used those scholarships in advance, and Les Miles and his staff coming in had kind of very precious few places they could put their scholarships when it came to the first recruiting class. They used one of them on Thomas McVitie, who is a junior college quarterback with 2 years of eligibility remaining. If you look up and down in college football, the reason that those guys, even if they're highly recruited, don't often end up at top places is because schools usually develop their own quarterbacks. You know, usually bring in, you have a guy that's starting as a sophomore or junior, they play for 2 or 3 years, and that allows you to get a freshman who you can redshirt and then develop in your system for 2 or 3 years. So those guys, if you're going to use a scholarship on them, you almost have to play them because that's a very, very vital resource. You have something invested in them. And there's only so many schools like Kansas out there that need that sort of guy to kind of step in and play right away. And we even heard at Big 12 Media Day back in July where Les Miles had said, hey, Thomas McVitie has the edge here, but it's between McVitie and Stanton. So they have every incentive to say Thomas McVitie is the guy. He's the quarterback. He's starting week one. The fact that it hasn't happened yet tells me that Thomas McVitie is not running with his job. And that Carter Stanley, most likely, again, I've been to two practices and they only allow us there for like the first 40 or 45 minutes. So, and even then, I'm not a quarterback guru, so I wouldn't trust my word for it anyway. But it tells me that most likely Carter Stanley at this point has outperformed Thomas McVitie. And so that's giving them, or they're wanting a little bit extra time here to make sure that they make the right decision, because this season, like so many others with Kansas football, the most important games are week one and week two. Those are the most winnable games, or the only two games of the season that KU's going to be favored. So even if you like a guy better, or you think this guy will be the starting quarterback, whatever the case may be, you got to get it right for games one and two. I mean, if Carter Stanley is the best guy and can help lead you to victory, you better play him, because otherwise you're going to lose those games and you're going to be looking down the barrel of a gun for the final 10 games trying to search out a victory. So I'm just being completely honest. I think it is a concern. I think if Thomas McVitie had played better here in the fall, I think he would have been named the starter. And I think that KU's coaches still have a lot invested in him and probably want him to win the job because he represents something fresh. He represents something new. He started a new regime. And Carter Stanley's kind of the guy that keeps hanging around, and he's sort of the indication of years past when they weren't successful. And I'm not saying that that should determine a starting quarterback. And I just told you, like, hey, if he's the best guy to win against Indiana State and Coastal Carolina, hey, you should play Carter Stanley. I'm just saying it seems to me like this thing is dragging on, less about, you know, trying to fool the other team, which is kind of what David Beatty's a lot of the time, and more about they're kind of waiting for Thomas McVitie to win his job, and he hasn't done it. So we'll have to kind of hang on and see what happens here over the next couple of weeks. But like I said, at some point in time, I would think KU would get a coach and a quarterback, and they would just be able to name a guy and let him go. But this is not going to be the year for that. And once again, KU might find itself rotating quarterbacks more than a lot of fans would hope.
Yeah, I mean, and what surprised me, honestly, was the fact that they immediately, like, because Thomas McVitie was one of the first recruits that they had. And like, I would not have been surprised if Les Miles, with the fact that there was essentially no expectations for this year coming in. You come in, you recruit one, maybe two freshman QBs out of high school, you know, guys that you think could develop into that kind of QB, like you said, that most high level programs develop on their own. bring Carter Stanley in as kind of the heir apparent, as this is the guy that's probably going to be our starter. And if he doesn't, it means that one of these freshman QBs that we recruited, you know, has really, really come on strong. And that gives us a lot of hope for the future. It didn't make a lot of sense for me for them to be looking at a JUCO guy, especially when, you know, like Carter Stanley has not played phenomenally, but he has at least shown enough, I think, to, you know, be a passable guy, especially in a zero, you know, a year zero where there's no expectations. You know, and there's been speculation among a lot, you know, KU fans all the time, whether, you know, are Carter Stanley's issues like his own physical issues, or has it been the fact that he has not been put in a very good situation to succeed? And I have no doubt that Carter Stanley, if he's the guy, will be more successful this year than he has in any year previous, because there were a lot of coaching issues. But I also, you know, I'm fully aware of the fact that Carter Stanley may just not have the physical tools that he needs to be, you know, performing at a high level in the Big 12. But, you know, him being a senior and having shown at least some of the flashes that you would think a guy would need, and bringing that senior leadership, and, you know, just the few chances he got last year, the team really kind of rallied behind him, and the fan base honestly rallied behind him. I would not have been surprised if they had just said, let's ride with Carter Stanley this year, not worry about bringing in a junior college quarterback. But once they brought him in, I think you're right. Like, that essentially locks them into, he is probably going to be the guy unless there's an injury or unless he has a real big issue and just can't perform. But it kind of hamstrings them to locking into, you know, 2 years of this guy. I mean, we saw that happen with Peyton Bender. We saw that happen with all the other guys that they brought in, you know, in the last few years. And I agree. I think they're kind of hamstrung. So that actually leads me into the one Twitter question that we did get tonight, from Hawk Jock, good friend of the podcast as well. You know, he asked, how many different starting quarterbacks are we going to have in the first three games? And of those, you know, in those first three games, how many total quarterbacks are we going to see, whether that's the same person starting every game or not?
That's a great question. I was actually coming up with predictions. I have to come up with five predictions for the season, five bold predictions for KU. And I was thinking, like, how many quarterbacks do I have to say that KU is going to play to, like, make it a bold prediction? You know what I mean? Or is it not bold?
Like, five?
You know, the first three games, starter. You know, maybe they could stick with a starter for all three games, you would think, but maybe not. And, you know, I hate to be the guy that just kind of throws this wrench in everything as well, but we also kind of have to remember that the third string quarterback is the coach's kid. So, like, never say never with really crazy stuff. And the fact that KU is running a new offense and it's going to require some brain work probably, and to get KU into good situations, doesn't necessarily mean that Manny Miles won't play either. You know what I mean? Like, his dad is the coach, you know? So, yeah. I guess the first three games, I think we'll definitely see two quarterbacks. I guess I'll be optimistic and say one guy can start all of them, but who knows? Who knows with Kansas? This is just kind of, it seems like the thing that keeps repeating over and over again. And I say that with no confidence that KU's going to have, I mean, this is not, should not be a high bar to clear. Like, to say that one quarterback is going to start all three of the first games in the non-conference, especially against two opponents you should beat at home in the first 2 weeks. But I guess I will say that the odds would say that you would have one starting quarterback over that time, just because you probably should win, even if they don't play that well. But as I said before, I don't have any great feeling about that. And I don't say that, like, you know, planting my flag in the sand here, you know, with any confidence. So, I guess we'll see. But I would say they will have one starter for the first three games. It might change over the course of the season. But nothing would surprise me with Les Miles. And the fact he also kind of likes to play some games with the media and say weird things and joke around tells me that he has some confidence about him as well and is going to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree that barring a complete disaster, like, I think it's going to be one starting quarterback. But again, I wouldn't be surprised to see three or even four quarterbacks playing, especially if the Boston College game gets out of hand. Manny Miles could easily come in at that point. I could even see a guy like Miles Kendrick, you know, coming in to play. He's already burned the red shirt, so at this point it doesn't matter whether he plays or not. He's still using up his eligibility. So, you know, if things get out of hand, or if they decide they want to build some special packages just for him, like, I could see that being something that Les Miles and Les Canning will do to kind of try to throw a wrench into things. You know, so, like, I wouldn't be surprised to see four different quarterbacks playing at some point in the first three games. I do think, though, they are going to try to start one unless, you know, the quarterback that they pick to open up the season just absolutely lays an egg against Indiana State, or there's an injury. Like, obviously, if an injury happens, you know, you throw everything else out the window, because and I wouldn't really hold that against, you know, the team if the starter gets injured at some point and they have to play with, you know, play someone else. But yeah, I would not be surprised by anything. Les Miles is known for being a kind of a wacky guy who typically tries to do some, you know, traditional old school type things, but, you know, he is the Mad Hatter for a reason. I wouldn't be surprised to see him just go completely insane and try to do something that nobody's ever done before. You know, and we could see, you know, four quarterbacks playing a single game as kind of a game plan type of thing. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what the answer to that is either. I think I'm kind of just as confused as you are. So, but I take it you don't particularly like the quote that Les Kanin gave, basically saying that don't name a starter because if something happens, if there's an injury or something, then we've essentially shot the confidence in the second guy, making him step up to be the starter. Like, I don't know that I buy that reasoning as a, you know, a good reason to not name a starter going into the year. But I mean, would you agree that that just seems like a guy making up an excuse to not have to name a starter?
Yeah, and actually that was Les Miles, but
okay. I saw
it's
it
so interesting
Kanin as well, so
yeah, well Les Kanin, he's not saying much either, and it sort of makes me wonder, and this is probably a whole other podcast discussion here, and probably better served when we can actually see the team in 3 or 4 weeks. They're keeping everything under wraps. Like, they don't want to reveal anything with the offense. Everybody's very tight-lipped. It seems like Les Miles is really running the show, and even though he allowed assistant coaches to talk, none of them were really, or very few of them were saying very much, so it seemed like maybe there was an order from the top to not reveal anything before game week. But as I talked about with Les Miles, it's just we're all kind of brand new with this. Like, we haven't covered him, and he's kind of new to us, and we're new to him. And so, like, he, in the last press conference, he brought up before we could even ask, he said, hey, should I bring up the quarterbacks or wait for you guys to ask about it? And then, you know, he talked about it, said, hey, not going to name the guy. Don't think it benefits them. You know, those guys are still battling. And then, like, he went on to make a joke about, you know, it wouldn't hold the guy back if they were either tall or had the name Miles with them. And then he started talking about how Carter Stanley and Thomas McVitie were tall, and how Miles Fallon, Miles Kendrick, and Manny Miles all had Miles in their name. So it was like a joke he had come up with beforehand that he wanted to be sure to use. And then he got asked about again, and then talked about the competition thing that you just spoke about and not wanting to reveal things to the opponent. So it's like, it's so weird, because, like, I know he's trying to joke some of the time, and sometimes I think he's not being serious, and then sometimes he is being serious. So, like, it's really hard to decipher as a reporter to try to figure out, like, was he, like, joking there, or was he telling the truth? And like I said, Les Miles comes here with a lot of confidence in what he does and what he believes in, and kind of how he can be perceived, too. So I think all of us are still sort of trying to adjust to this as well, but I guess the crazy thing is, like we talked about, even though him and David Beatty had very different ways of dealing with the media and talking about the quarterback position, the final result is still the final result, is that KU football does not have a starting quarterback, and they haven't named it and might not name it even before the game starts. So it is sort of crazy how even though different methods end up in the same category, I guess, and so far for Les Miles, you know, it's been sort of a serious quote, and then a joking quote, and then a funny quote, and then a sort of serious statement, but the whole thing just results in them not wanting to reveal who their starting quarterback is and not reveal much about their offense. And so, listen, it's like the old Bill Snyder thing. If it works, it works. If they win the first game 41-0, no fan is going to care about how goofy this all sounds. But it better work. They better win, because otherwise all this stuff just seems kind of like weird stuff of the past that has really not helped out KU football before. So if Les Miles stuff works, it works. It's worked in the past. So I guess we'll have to wait and see if in the next couple of weeks if his game day magic can come out once again.
Yeah, hopefully. All right, that'll do it for our football discussion tonight. I'm going to go throw it to one more quick break. We have a fun basketball question to wrap up with when we get back. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. Okay, so I alluded to it before the break. One of our basketball writer, Steve Fetch, is actually doing a countdown to Kansas basketball. Got started a little bit earlier than he normally does this year, but he's doing the top 30 individual player seasons under Bill Self, which took me a little while to wrap my head around and kind of come up with my own short list. He's doing this all on his own. He hasn't consulted any of the rest of us, so he's got his own ideas in mind. And he suggested I ask you for either just a quick short list of, you know, maybe the top three or four seasons, or if you have one that is clear in your mind that is the best individual player season under Bill Self. So I guess my question for you is there one that stands out as well above all the rest? Or is there at least a group of three or four that you think are kind of above everything else?
No, not to me. And again, you know how my mind works with some of the advanced stats and kind of looking and trying to judge those guys based off of more objective measures rather than subjective. Because I think if you talk to fans, the first ones they're going to think of are the ones that were like the player of the year season. And, you know, Frank Mason, obviously, his senior year would come to mind. And Thomas Robinson was second in the voting, I think, back in 2012 behind Anthony Davis in most of those. So those are the immediate ones that come to mind just as far as perception goes. But if you could take a step a little bit deeper, you know, you can look at some of the numbers and say, well, some of these other seasons look pretty good, and maybe they were a little bit overlooked. And I'm sure some of these numbers, based on what I read with you guys at Rock Chalk Talk, are definitely being considered. So it's probably a list I can very much get behind. But a couple that kind of stand out to me, I know he wasn't first team all Big 12 even, but Mario Chalmers 08 is one that if you consider the steal numbers he had, which he led the nation in steal percentage to go along with the great offensive year that he had, that is one of the top ones. And I know it ended with him making obviously the most famous shot in Kansas history, so that doesn't hurt as well. But this is one where the raw stats are going to help him in that regard, just because the steal number is so high. And we could get in a debate about whether steals are real defense or if that's just sort of something you have or you don't, and you can be a bad on-ball defender and a good taker of the ball, a good taker away of the ball like Mario Chalmers was. But that's one guy I would think of. As we mentioned, Mason probably deserves to be in the discussion. I know my friend CJ Moore would not let me go without saying 2011 Marcus Morris, because that is absolutely one of his favorite player seasons. But I think one that stands out in my mind that kind of goes a little bit overlooked, just because it was kind of it was considered a duo at the time. But Cole Aldrich's sophomore year, I think that one's going to rank pretty high just based off of he had great efficiency numbers in there. He rebounded everything, and then he blocked a ton of shots. And I know he got looped in with Sean Collins, who took on a huge offensive role for that team. But the fact of the matter was that, you know, Cole was super efficient, had a high usage, and then did almost everything defensively for Kansas when it came to defense and rebounding shots and blocking shots. And so I would think that one's going to rank pretty high. And I think I've always kind of considered that one of the seasons that maybe gets a little bit overlooked just because that one was considered a duo. And you also have to remember that 2008-2009 Kansas team, it didn't have too much besides Cole Aldrich and Sharon. You know, they had a couple Morris twin brothers who were freshmen and a young Tyshawn Taylor, but that was a pretty rough team early on and still went on to win the Big 12. So I would definitely say that one would be up there and probably one of my personal favorites. But again, it's going to be hard to go wrong with some of these other ones. Frank Mason, Marcus Morris, Thomas Robinson, and even Mario Chalmers in 08. You look at all those, and those are pretty good years under Bill Self.
Yes, some other ones that I had thought of. I actually was thinking the Sharon Collins, you know, like you said, kind of a duo, but I thought that Collins was a really, really big part of that team and kind of helped drive it forward. And I mean, either one of those two, I think you can't go wrong with those being like in the top 10. I'm not even sure where he's at. I haven't looked at the ones he has scheduled to kind of peek ahead from where everyone else is at. But, you know, I think that could potentially be one of those. You know, Jeff Withey, his senior year, I thought was absolutely phenomenal. I'm curious to see where he'll rank that. I think that one could easily slot into the top, you know, 10, top five, somewhere in there. Joel Embiid, I think his one season probably won't be ranked as highly as it maybe should. You know, he was such a difference maker, and I realized that they had a decent amount around them, and, you know, Wiggins is probably the guy that most people think about, but, you know, he just made such a big difference when he was in the game, that it's hard to not think of him as probably one of the best individual players. His stats may not have accumulated to the point where you can, you know, throw him up in that top five, but, you know, he definitely was one of the bigger talents that was there. So, yeah, I'm definitely interested to kind of see how all that shakes out. Hopefully we gave, you know, Fetch a good idea of where they should be if he hasn't already put them in there. So, but
he can change them around now. Yeah, we gave him all the answers.
Exactly. Well, you know, I did tell him if you had a clear cut number one that since yours was going to get out there first, that yours was objectively the correct one. And so if he had it wrong, then, you know, we would have to go after him for that. But Since you didn't have a clear cut number one, you know, I guess there's a little bit of wiggle room for him now. So, all right, Jesse, any other final thoughts you wanted to finish us off with in the last minute or so?
No, I don't think so. I just would encourage people. We've kind of redone the Sports Beat KC podcast with Blair Kirkhoff and much better editing. So I know you guys do a great job with this podcast, but if you're looking for more stuff, it's out 5 days a week now. I just encourage people to go check that out too, because we put a lot of effort into it and try to make it better than it was before. So hopefully people will go check that out.
Yeah, I've been checking that out every opportunity that I get as well. And of course, people can find you online on Twitter at Jesse Newell. If they haven't already found you, then I'm wondering what they're actually looking for, because it's really not that hard to find all the stuff you put out there. So, all right, Jesse, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please do go out and find us. It's your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all of those. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can subscribe there. Please do, you know, rate us 5 stars, nice comments, all that great stuff. It really does help get the podcast out there so that more people can listen to us. But again, thank you guys so much for listening. If you do want to contact us, get comments, questions, suggestions, any of that stuff, we are on Twitter at Rock Chalk Pod. You can email us rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com. You can interact with the SB Nation site, Rock Chalk Talk, at Rock Chalk Talk as well. All of us are wanting to interact with you and kind of get your thoughts and comments and kind of chat with everybody there. So but once again, Jesse, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.